Hello, you're listening to Radio Reverb. My name is Aya. This is Refugee Radio, and today we will be speaking to 21-year-old Isra. Welcome, Isra.
Hello.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do and where you're currently living?
I'm studying now applied science. I'm from Syria originally.
And where are you currently living?
In Hastings.
And have you always lived in Hastings?
Yes.
And before you were in Hastings, you mentioned you'd come from Syria. Did you come straight from Syria, or were you living somewhere in between?
I was live in Lebanon before I came to.
For how long?
About 5 years.
Okay, so you left Syria about 8 years ago.
Yes.
And how old were you when you left?
15.
Okay, so you've spent quite a big portion of your teenage years outside of Syria.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about the pros and cons of living in Hastings in the UK?
Living in the UK in general has a lot of pros. At least I have now a visa, so I'm here legally. And people are quite welcoming, really. And the community in general is nice, and the place is nice. I'm studying. That's the biggest thing for me, really, studying.
And you mentioned you were studying applied sciences.
Yes.
How did you come about to choose this subject as your field of interest?
Well, I like chemistry. My favorite subject is chemistry, and I wanted to study anything deal with chemical substance or this kind of stuff, and especially the part of chemistry that deal with the human body. So I've been told that I have to study kind of A level or equivalent. Then I found out that BTEC course applied science will be equivalent to A levels, and that would allow me to kind of study a little bit more in chemistry, any field I want. So I just did it.
And before, so you know you're currently doing your BTEC. Before that, were you studying in Lebanon?
I did at the last 3 years, but it wasn't like what I'm doing here. I just did that because I didn't want to sit down at home doing nothing. But I know at the end I won't be able to go to uni. I just get back to be at home doing nothing. But at least I would have some kind of certificates.
Could you tell us a little bit about what it was like to study in Lebanon?
Well, I went to a school that special to Syrian people, which is not Lebanese school because Syrian students are not allowed in Lebanese schools. And we were studying the Lebanese curriculum, but in Arabic, and the students, all of the students were Syrian students, and the teachers as well. So it's specifically for Syrian. And I did study for 3 years, and I was preparing to study the fourth one, which is the International Baccalaureate. And then afterward, I would be able to go to uni, but in Lebanon and the circumstances there, you wouldn't be able to if you are a Syrian, really.
So what would you say the attitudes then towards Syrians are in Lebanon?
At the beginning, when I went to Lebanon, the Lebanese people were quite welcoming. Not all of them, most of them. But the government basically didn't like that. And it is really hard to get a visa. So most of the Syrians there are staying in Lebanon illegally. And whenever they caught someone, they will might like send him back to Syria, so where it's dangerous. And yeah, but afterward, in the last 3 years, the Lebanese people also started to be like not welcoming as they used to before, and the life is quite hard, really. You are not allowed to work there. If you work, that would be illegally, and if they caught you, as I mentioned before, you'll be in prison and then sent back to Syria. That's part of the life.
So that you've spoken a little bit about the struggles of how it was being in Lebanon. How is life different here in the UK?
Everything is different here. The language is different. That's the main barrier facing all the Syrian people who's coming here now. And the culture, the people, they are welcoming, but it's different culture. So they need to learn more about our culture, our religion as well. And we need to learn more about them. We need to know how we should treat them, how we should talk to them, so we are polite or not.
What was one of the biggest culture differences you found?
Yeah, the family part. Because in Syria, once you are 18, you just go to uni, but you don't leave the family house. So all of the family will stay living together the whole time. But here, I found out that most of the young people, once they are 18, they would leave their parents' house. They would have kind of independency. Yeah.
Why is education to you the most important thing about starting a new life and settling in the UK?
It's important thing because you need to, like, a certificate. You need to be well educated to be able to get a good job and then start your life, like settle in a new place and get good life, or not good life, what we can call it. I don't know.
It's a good life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was it like for you getting used to the language once you came here?
I came here and I didn't study English. I did study English a little bit, but not the English that allow me or give me the experience that I can speak English. I just learned some vocabularies, grammars and that stuff, but I didn't speak English at all when I came here, and I struggled even with understanding people. And then after going to the courses and working really hard on the language, I got it and started to speak fluently.
And when you didn't have, you know, the language skills to start with, how did you find that affected your day-to-day life?
Well, it was very hard, really, because you don't speak the language, there's no people around you that they speak your language, so you can communicate with them, and you need to just go out and try to find out about the place that you are in. And I came in very hard time. I came in holidays time, so it was really hard.
So you came to the UK when it was like a holiday time. Yeah. So there was a lot of people and circumstances that you didn't necessarily understand.
Yeah.
What kind of circumstances did you go through? Maybe an example, like in hospital or in a supermarket where you thought, oh, I really wish I could express myself right now. Did that ever happen to you?
Yes, it did. A lot, really. It happened. One example, when I just first arrived and we need to buy like a telephone, a number, and then we went to the company shop and we asked for a deal, but we didn't understand what the gentleman was saying to us. and we couldn't explain really what we want. It was really, really hard time. I wish that I really speak English right now and just tell him straight away what I want. And also going to the hospitals, it was hard because the medical terms, everything is hard. Even if you speak the language, the medical terms are different language. It's different English. So, yeah, it is hard, really.
What kind of support is there available then to people that have recently arrived in the country?
There's the local councils usually support the families when they arrive, and they help them to settle because they prepare the house for them when they came in, and they help them to settle, like get their bills paid and registered in the college, and so they go to courses and learn English because most of them, they don't speak the language. All kind of stuff, really, going to hospitals, everything. And also there is a project that helping the refugees, supporting the refugee, which is a voluntary work where the volunteers come to help the families in anything they need, really.
What's the project called?
Body Project.
The Body Project?
Yeah.
And is it just in the local area, or do you know if that's a voluntary group that's in, across different areas as well?
It's at the moment, it's the local area, Hastings and Rother. That's it.
And what has it been like for you seeing the local Syrian community grow in Hastings?
It's really nice feeling because you now don't have family like that, they are related to you, like your uncles, your aunt, you don't have them here. But when you see there's many families coming, people from different age groups, and all trying to communicate together, getting out sometimes, yeah, that's really nice. You feel like you are at home, you are not stranger.
Do you feel that without the community you might have felt lonely?
Yes, definitely I would.
I mean, there is also some linguistic differences. In Arabic, I believe you can refer to your mother's friends as auntie,
yeah,
and your father's friends as uncle, as if they were your own family.
Yes.
What kind of support has it been like having that community here and seeing your identity reflected in other people as well?
We are trying to support each other, especially when the family first arrived. Because I've been here for almost 3 years now, so I'm one of the big, like, first families, one of the first families who arrived here. So we are kind of used to the life here. We know what we are doing, what we should do if there is something. So when we know that there is a new family coming, we just try to help them as much as we can and as much as we allowed, because there is a worker who's supposed to support them. So we can't do their job, but if the family needs something, we should help them. We feel like we should help because we are family now.
And you mentioned, so you're one of the first families to arrive in Hastings. You came with the Syrian resettlement program.
Yes.
What was that process like?
Well, it is a long process, really, in Lebanon, because you have to register with the UN Refugee Department, and then they will invite you to do few interviews to the family to see, like, about them, to know more about them, like, what is their requirements, what if they have some kind of disabilities, yes, and then try to match that family file with the country's requirements. So this country can't take this family. They match them, then another process starts, really, where you go to have some medical tests so they know more about that, if you have some diseases, so they know about it before you arrive. And yes, then the visa process, and because most of the Syrian in Lebanon and the neighbor countries are staying there kind of illegally, they need to get their visas done before they can leave Lebanon through the airport, really. Yeah, and then the traveling, where you go to the airport, and that's, yeah.
So from start to finish, you know, when you make the application to when you arrived in the UK, how long did that take?
Well, we registered with the UN once we arrived to Lebanon, so that was about 8 years ago. And then after 4 years, they invited us to the interviews, and after 6 months, we just moved here.
So it's a long process.
Yes.
What was it like, you know, living with the uncertainty for that period of time?
It was really hard, really. Because you're just not settled, and you don't feel that you are comfortable. You are in your place, you are not in your community. Yeah. And especially when you feel that you are not welcomed in that place, it's really hard.
And what did that, you know, time of uncertainty mean for your education?
I didn't study, like, for about 3 years. I wasn't doing anything, really. Just sitting at home doing nothing. And that was really hard. It was kind of disappointing thing, because you're supposed to be, like, the two countries are neighbors, and that's make it harder, because we kind of one people, like, the place is one country, used to be one country one day, and then when you go there, you find that they don't want you to be there, so it's really hard, and disappointing, really.
What were your interests and hobbies when you were living in Syria, and did you manage to bring any of that with you when you were in Lebanon, or even now that you're in the UK?
Okay. I really love reading books and cooking. I love cooking. In Lebanon, I wasn't, like, able to do anything like that. Not reading, definitely not. But cooking, I kind of have big experience with that, because, you know, when you are doing nothing, you just try to help out in the housework, and yeah, so I used to help my mom a lot, and that was the biggest experience that I had. But I didn't realize that I like to do that, because I just have to do it. I have no other options. So just doing it without the feeling. But now when I'm doing the cooking thing, I really like that. I do that with love and joy, really. And I'm reading books now, and reading books in English.
What kind of books are you reading?
Novels, like stories and, yeah, this stuff.
Do you have a favourite genre?
No, I'm just reading anything suggested to me, because I don't know many writers. And the people who was trying to help me suggest sometimes books for me. So I just buy it and try to read it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Are there any Syrian or Arabic-speaking artists or authors that you follow or you particularly like?
Yeah, I like the artists. The Arabic ones. There is a couple of Syrian ones that I really like. Well, they are actress, really. Ali Azoubi, I love him. And the other one is a lady called Samia Al-Jazairi. She's a lovely lady.
Do you still follow them now here?
Yes. Yeah. I always try to keep up with my culture by watching TV series or films or anything I can, like anything that make me in contact with my culture.
So you told us a little bit about the books that you're reading, and you mentioned as well that you have a love for cooking. What kind of stuff do you cook?
The Syrian food. My favorite dish is something we call makluba. I really love it, so I cook it and have funny time when I'm cooking it.
What's makluba like?
It's like layers of aubergine and meat and rice, and then you make them in layers and cook them, and afterward you turn it around so the rice would be in the bottom layer and everything gonna be on the top of it. So if you translate it to English, it's gonna be upside down.
The name of the dish is literally upside down.
Yes.
And so you mentioned that the way you show your identity now that you're a minority in the UK is keeping up to date with your favourite artists, cooking, so through food is a big part of culture as well. And you mentioned a little bit to us earlier about your process of learning English as a language. What are the other ways that you maintain your Arabic identity as a Muslim woman as well?
I do go to the mosque and trying to teach the little children my language. Yeah, because they are interested in learning Arabic. And some of the bodies, the project that we talked about earlier, some of the volunteers there would like to learn Arabic. So we have now Arabic class, so they are coming. So we try to teach them some Arabic, some words, vocabularies, and alphabet and this stuff.
Had you ever taught before?
No.
This is your first experience?
Yes.
What's it been like teaching?
It's amazing. I've never thought that one day I would be standing in front of people and telling them things or teaching them things. But I've been doing that for a couple of years now. After a couple of years, I'm really confident. I'm much more confident than I used to be. And I just communicate with everyone, even if he's not Arabic. I just communicate in English and talk and, get in with it.
It must be different teaching children to teaching adults.
Yes, definitely it is. Because children, they need to play, they need to have fun. If they don't have fun, they don't learn anything really. But the adults, it's a little bit serious. Because we are not in official class, so we have to be serious. We just have fun a little bit, but most of the time we need to learn.
Okay, so during the application process for the Syrian resettlement program, you mentioned there was a part where they had to match the families up to the host country.
Yes.
Did past Isra ever think that in the future she would be living in the UK?
No, never.
What do you wish someone had told you about it before? What advice do you think? Oh, I wish I knew this before I came to the UK. Were there any surprises when you came?
Everything is shocking at the beginning. It was shocking. At the first shock would be the language. You don't understand anything going around. Nothing at all. Just walking like blind. Yeah, you'd be blind really if you don't speak the language of the country that you are going to. And the way the people that treat you at the beginning, it is shocking really. a different culture thing, like shaking hands. We normally don't shake hands with men, ladies and men.
How do you go about, you know, communicating or like bridging the gap between those cultural differences? So you mentioned an example which is as simple as greeting and shaking someone's hand. You must have encountered some people who weren't aware of the fact that Muslim ladies choose not to shake men's hands.
Yeah.
How do you go about, you know, reaching an understanding?
Well, at the beginning, when the volunteer people come to us, they treat us as they do normally with anybody they see. And that was a little bit difficult, and it took us a while to teach them a little bit about our culture. And once we taught the volunteers we had, they are now organization, so they teach or making training to the new people that want to join their organization, and telling them what you must do, what you mustn't do, how you should treat the people, especially the ladies if you are a man. Yes, it's different, but it still happens sometime when you meet someone for the first time.
So it's with time, really.
Yeah.
And just conversations with respect that people come to an understanding of each other's differences.
Yes. Respect is the most important thing, really. Because if you don't respect the person in front of you, you can't treat them the correct way, or you can't understand, you don't even bother to listen to them, what they are saying, or when they talking to you about their culture, their country, anything really, not only the culture or the country. You don't listen to them because you don't respect them. So respect is the main factor, really.
Can we talk a little bit about the direction you're going in education?
Okay, so
you have a year left for your BTEC.
Yes.
And you'll be soon applying to university. What's that experience been like, planning for that?
It's really hard one for me, really hard, because going to university would require me to leave my family, the left of my family, because the big family is now everywhere in the world, and I still have only my small family, my parents and my siblings. So going to university I should leave them somehow and go away, start a new life, and that would be another shock, really. I get used to the life here in Hastings, and the language wouldn't be a barrier anymore because I'm speaking English now. I can talk to people, understand them, but the shock will be like being responsible to yourself. You have to have the responsibility of everything in your life, and that's hard, really, and that would be a shock for me. Well, I'm sure I can deal with it.
So you're a very family-oriented girl.
Yes.
Have you ever spent a long period of time away from your family?
No, never.
What do you think that experience will be like?
Loneliness, maybe? Yeah. Well, I don't want to imagine, so I don't stop myself of doing it or do that, but I can't imagine how the life gonna be.
But there's also a lot of positives. What are you looking forward to in that part of life?
Being independent, have my, like, being responsible myself, only myself. I don't have anybody to be responsible for him. I just look after myself. Being more independent, doing things to myself, not waiting until my mom get it done for me.
And what are you hoping to study?
Hopefully pharmacology. Yes, because I'm interested in chemistry, and that part of education would be the area that I want to do, really.
Okay, that's brilliant. Are you quite open to moving to different parts of the UK? You mentioned you like Hastings,
yeah.
But would moving to other places be an option?
Yes, it is. Because, well, first of all, the universities are all quite far away from Hastings. There's no university close to Hastings. So I have to. And also it would be interesting to see different parts of the UK, different cities, different towns. Yeah, why not? Adventure.
Are there any people in the community who are going through a similar struggle as yourself?
Yes, there are a lot.
A lot of young adults, yes. People that are finishing their education and looking to continue. What is a common struggle that a lot of students, migrant students, go through?
First of all, the certificates. They get the certificates from their countries or the country they've been in before they come here. And they try to find the equivalent of it in the British system, the English system. But most of the certificates have no equivalent here, so they have to start from the beginning, like myself. I did study in Lebanon till I can go to university. Then when I come here, I studied from GCSE level because they couldn't find equivalents to my certificate that I brought with me.
What was it like studying, I guess, with people who were younger than you?
Yeah. It's hard to make friends because they are a bit younger, and especially when I first go to college, like at the beginning, my English wasn't like excellent. It's still not excellent, but now I can communicate more with people. But when I first went to college, it wasn't like that. It was a bit bad, really. And when they found out that I'm not a great language speaker, so they try to avoid talking to me a little bit. And that make it harder because we are studying together and now we are still together after a while. It's hard to make friends. And sometimes it's hard to get the studying done with the assignments, the tests you have. It's a little bit hard, but I'm dealing with the studying, but the friend bit is... Yeah.
How so? How is it different? How is the British system different from the education systems that you were in previously?
Well, here you don't have to study a million things at the same time. We do study 12 to 14 subjects in that age, like the, what you have it, like A-level. A-level, you have to study 3 subjects and that's it. But in Syria, you have to study like 12 or 13 subjects at the same time and you have to pass them all and get the good grades to go to the university. And sometimes you don't go to the thing that you want to do. Like, you won't be able to study the thing that you are aiming to. Yeah, that's the hardest bit or the most different bit. Because here you study only 3 subjects. I know it's hard studying. It's hard work to get it done. But at least at the end, you would be able to go to uni and study what you want. Yeah.
So there's a different attitude towards, you know, the respectable subjects to study. So here, it's all right for you to study what you want if you're interested in it. But you mentioned that, to my understanding, in Syria, really you're pushed to do subjects you might not necessarily be interested in, just because it's seen as a good subject to study. What other, you know, cultural kind of attitudes you found were different when you came here to Syria, besides education? Maybe to do with family life or social interactions or things to do specifically with youth, like being a teenager or now a young adult. How is it different here in the UK than it would have been if you had grown up, if you had continued living in Syria?
You would keep, like, all the time, keep up with your family. You should stay with them. Not should, but that's what we do normally. That's our culture. We stay with them till maybe we get married. Yeah, and that's it. Even if you are studying, you don't have to move to a different place to study, because in every city there is a university where you can study. And also we keep up with our relevance. So not only the parents or the siblings, you keep with your uncles, your aunts, and your grandparents. You keep visit them all the time. Yes, and sometimes you live together, maybe. That's the biggest thing. I found it really different to the culture in our country.
How would you say you've changed, you know, growing up throughout your teenage years in three different countries? How's it changed? How has it affected you?
Some of the effects are bad and some of them are good. Because you are a little bit, like, more mature than the other people in your age group, because you have faced a lot of difficult things in your life, and your life is changed. Everything in your life changed. So it's difficult, really. But at the end, you are learning new things. You are having new life, hopefully better life. So that's all worth doing it, really. Yeah.
What advice would you give to a Syrian teenager coming to the UK? Maybe something you wish someone had told you. What would you pass on from your own experience?
I should tell them that they should never give up with their life, really. Because I'm now changing my life. I'm studying and I'm having better life than it was in Lebanon. And it took me a while to do that, because everything here take time, really. It's time. Not sometimes we find it long time, because we don't used to wait all of that time. But after being here, and dealing with people, and found out that everything will take time, so don't rush, just wait. Everything will happen and it's time, and don't give up. That's the most important thing.
If someone maybe was finding it particularly hard to get back into education, and, you know, they're not as motivated to go back to school because they're no longer minors, you know, they've passed the age where they need to go to school. What would you say to them?
Well, I would tell them something that I've been told throughout my college, really, that when you are working and you don't have, like, qualifications, when you are not qualified person, unqualified person, your life wouldn't be as good as the qualified person, because the job opportunity wouldn't be good. You might earn like £6 an hour, whereas you, if you continue your education and finished it, you might have £10 or £12 an hour. That would make a big difference for your life. That's what I've been told. So, yeah, the job opportunity would be better if you continue your education and finish it. And your life hopefully gonna be better.
What would you say is an unexpected struggle that not a lot of people might know about when it comes to settling in the UK?
As we mentioned throughout the interview, the language is the main barrier, but the interpretation thing is really a big issue to the people who are arriving here. They don't speak the language and they need somebody to be with them, to show them around, not only show them around the place they are in, to explain to them what should they do here, that's what the other families do, but we can't be together all the time. And they need someone to speak the language and support them till they can at least speak a little bit. Even if one person in that family can speak the language a little bit, that would be great to the whole family, because he or she would be able to support the family in somehow. Yeah, so the interpreters are a big problem, because there aren't many interpreters around.
Throughout the settlement process, you have an English-speaking caseworker.
Yes.
And sometimes not, depending on availability, an interpreter. What difference do you think having an interpreter makes to a session?
It makes a big difference, because you are understanding every single word that is being saying in that session, and every word that you are saying to the officer would be interpreted, so they understand you as well. And the problems will be sorted out quickly.
Would you say that would be the main, improvement? If you suggested an improvement, would you say that would be it? To have more interpreters in the system and to develop interpretation services?
Yes, and more officers to support the families, more support workers, because we are now about 15 families. And there's only 2 support workers.
In Hastings.
So that's a big number. Not only for us, for them, there's a huge amount of work they have to get done. And a lot of people waiting till they get that job or work done. So it's better to have a little bit more workers to support the families. So we don't have to wait a long time till that thing got done. And they don't have to work a longer hour than they need to.
How valuable to you and your family has it been having a support worker?
It's really important, because at the beginning, the support worker we had at the beginning, the first couple of months, she was working part-time with the Syrian resettlement program. And she wouldn't even have a meeting with us regularly, and we are just arrived to the country, we don't understand anything going on around. Then they stopped her and got a new worker who would be working with us in full time, and she sorted all the problems out, because we had a lot of problems at the beginning with education, with bills, with everything. And she sorted that out really very quick. Yeah, so we are a little bit more settled after. When you don't have problems, you'll feel like you are comfortable where you are. So maybe having more workers would give the families the feel of settled and comfortable more.
What are your hopes and dreams for you and your family in the future?
I hope that I can graduate at the end and my family is settled and they are happy in this country. But the biggest wish would be to my country, that war to be ended, and hopefully people can get back there.
Is there any other message that you would like to give to our listeners and our audience?
No, I would just say thank you very much for all of them to listen to that interview. And hopefully get better understanding about the refugees and their circumstances, the situation that they've been in before they came in, so they can help more. Yeah, because everybody, when trying to help, they can help. But if you are saying another one gonna help, and he would say another one gonna help, nobody can help. And
thank you very much for joining us today, Isra. It's been lovely having you here.
Thank you very much.